This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years with expertise across income and alternatives. Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
Here's your money briefing for Tuesday, March 15th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Renters who struggled to make their monthly payments during the pandemic got a reprieve when governments imposed eviction bans. But as tenants are finding their financial footing, they're now facing rents that are climbing, often at double-digit percentage rates. And that has some cities and states weighing rent control laws.
Housing prices are rising so quickly at such a rate. This becomes a big part of general inflation and has broader consequences for the economy. And that's the case in many cities.
WSJ reporter Will Parker has been our go-to resource about the rental market. Coming up, we'll talk with him about how rent control laws work and the hurdles they face being put into practice. That's after the break.
This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years with expertise across income and alternatives. Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
A big part of the overall jump in inflation is the sharp increase in the cost of rent. It's up an average of 18% over the past 2 years, according to Redfin. To ease the financial burden on tenants, more U.S. cities and states are considering rent control laws. So how do they work? WSJ's Will Parker has covered the rental market for us throughout the pandemic, and he joins me now. Will, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So Will, why have rents risen so much in a relatively short amount of time?
Well, there's not any one reason, but there are a lot of things that have been happening kind of all at the same time. You know, one is after the pandemic broke out, there were a large number of people that decided they wanted to buy homes, and they went out in the market and found that there was very little to buy. And that, of course, drove up the price of homes for sale a lot, excluded a lot of people from the for sale housing market, and meant they'd be renting apartments for longer. So that, you know, had an effect on the price of rentals because of the demand. And then a little later into the pandemic, as business restrictions decreased and university campuses began opening and things like that, you had a whole generation of younger renters who had been living with family or living at home, perhaps, that all flooded rental markets around the same time and added a bunch of new demand to the rental market. And that gave landlords a green light to raise prices again. And the fact has been that, you know, building owners are finding that people are paying the higher rents. Seeing how housing is, prices are rising all around them, you know, there aren't a lot of choices to move and find more affordable housing right now for many renters and all over the country.
Now, why are economists concerned about the rate that rents have been rising?
Because they see that the rate at which rents are rising, the inflation that's happening in the housing market, that's a big part of the general inflation that we talk about in the economy. And so if you have a situation in which housing prices are rising so quickly at such a rate, this becomes a big part of general inflation and has broader consequences for the economy. And of course, you know, these big increases in rent that we're seeing, the biggest impact they're having is really at the bottom end of the income chain, the hospitality and retail workers, lower wage workers who are seeing housing for, you know, really modest apartments, seeing prices go up dramatically, but their wages are not rising at nearly the same rate that rents are. And that's the case in many cities.
Okay, so you've been with us throughout the pandemic discussing eviction bans and other protections put in place for renters. Have all those expired?
Just about all of those are expired or in the process of being wound down in just about every part of the country. So yeah, the market is more open again. Landlords are freer to carry out evictions and to take control of their properties in a way that they were prevented from during the pandemic. And that will, of course, mean, you know, more rent increases as more apartments turn over with the eviction moratorium expired.
All right. So how do these rent control laws actually work? And what's their intended purpose?
So rent control or rent stabilization, they're different terms that are used to describe somewhat different policies. But in general, all of these laws seek to set some parameters for how much a landlord can increase the rent in a given year. Most of them seek to restrict rate increases to a single digit percentage, something like 3 or 5% is common. Others give a little more of a cushion, give a little more room for landlords, and we'll say something like 5% plus inflation and get those increases higher to 10% or something like that, depending on what inflation looks like in a given year. But the intent of all of them is to slow down the pace at which when rents are rising. And, you know, we're seeing asking rents in some cities like Tampa and Miami, you know, rise 30% in a single year. Of course, the difference between 5% and 30% is huge. And that's apparent to both renters and landlords, and that's what the argument is over right now.
Can you give us some examples of some rent control laws that are currently in place?
Sure. I mean, the most famous ones are in New York City, and they've been around for many, many decades. About half of the housing in New York City is what's called rent stabilized, and rents at those apartments generally can only go up a couple percentage points a year. There's been a lot of exceptions for that in the past, and laws have changed, but generally that's the case. New construction apartments are usually not included in that, unless they're part of some special tax program. But, you know, we have some newer proposals that differ, and they go in a couple different directions. One of the most strict rent controls that's been proposed in the U.S. Just passed a ballot measure in St. Paul, Minnesota in the fall. And that law is special because it doesn't have any exceptions for new construction buildings. They would be held to 3% increases on rent annually. And it also doesn't include exceptions for vacancy. A lot of these laws allow a landlord to reset the rent once a person moves out and raise the rent to a market rate. In St. Paul, the way things are looking, when their law goes into effect in the spring, landlords wouldn't have that option.
Now, there are some cities that had rent control laws for a certain period of time. Why did they go away?
So in the 1970s, there was a bit of a resurgence of rent control. You know, we'd had price controls after the First and Second World Wars, and some cities had set their own rent controls back then. But in the 70s, which was a period that was marked by really high inflation, you saw rent control coming back. You saw cities like Berkeley, California, and Los Angeles put in rent controls. And at this time, the real estate industry felt like they were really losing the rent control battle at the city level. And they began to organize a more concentrated lobby to focus on state government and the federal government. And over the course of the following decades, had really successful campaigns to lobby state governments and say, you know, we think rent control is really bad for housing markets, it's bad for local economies. And many of those states wrote laws that prohibited cities from setting their own rent controls. And in fact, those laws are still in place in more than a dozen states today. And that's really the biggest barrier for these progressive lawmakers that are looking to put in new rent controls now.
Well, let's talk more about opposition to rent control measures. What kinds of hurdles do these proposals face now?
So landlords are, of course, very opposed to rent control. One is, you know, on a sort of constitutional basis that it constitutes a sort of a taking of their property and deciding what they can and can't do with it. But, you know, more to the point, the arguments from the real estate industry have always been that, you know, rent control, it discourages new construction. We have a housing supply problem in the United States that virtually everyone agrees is not being resolved currently. Why do we want to discourage people from building more housing? And their argument is that we would if we're telling, you know, building owners that they're only going to get these, you know, modest increases on apartments. Another argument has been, you know, if you have rent control, you can't expect landlords to take as good a care of their apartments as they would otherwise too. And that could lead to a deteriorating housing supply, which is also not good for people. So that's their argument, and they're sticking to it. So, you know, according to the kind of traditional anti-rent control argument, if you have more housing supply and more development, that could ultimately be good for renters because, you know, potentially more supply means prices don't go up as much. Renters have more options. You have a healthier housing market. But I think what's happening right now is that rents are going up so much by such a large amount so quickly. We're talking 20, 25, 30% in some cities that, you know, a lot of lawmakers think we're past the point of, you know, talking about great things we could do to increase the housing supply over 10 years. Let's do that, but let's do something more quickly right now because we have a serious problem that is not getting any better.
You know, Will, we talked earlier about how rising rents have a deeper effect on lower income families. Has that added a political angle to this equation?
I think it's adding a lot of pressure on politicians, you know, whose voters are are looking for them to do something about inflation right now. We have a Wall Street Journal poll that shows that inflation is taking its biggest toll on Black women and Hispanic men and a lot of voters that are traditionally Democrats. And these Democratic lawmakers now are trying to come forth with proposals that would tackle inflation more directly. And there's a lot of pressure on them to actually have success with some of those policies, or, you know, it's going to be a much more difficult situation for them politically come election season.
All right. So in terms of getting these laws on the books in some cities, what comes next?
Well, I think we can expect a lot of mixed results. You know, we have places where they've been successful. You know, Santa Ana, California passed a new one recently, St. Paul, Minnesota. We have other states, though, where there's a situation that's a lot more complicated to navigate. Boston, for example, there's a mayor, Michelle Wu, who campaigned on bringing rent control back to Boston. There's been a poll of voters in Boston who say they want rent control, but this is one of the states that has one of these bans, these prohibitions on local rent control, and has had one for nearly three decades. And has a Republican governor who, you know, fairly recently said that he probably was not going to sign any bill to overturn rent control. So there's a lot of politics here. And even though there seems to be, you know, a decent amount of political will to get something like rent control done, there are a lot of barriers to realistically happening in probably the majority of places that it's being proposed right now.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Will Parker. Will, thanks so much for taking the time to chat.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal.